This is the Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Brian Rusk.
Welcome to the Rusk Report on the Bet AM 1520, blanketing 17 states and much of Canada. We're very honored to have, again, with us on the program, Ambassador Eric Javits. He's a retired American diplomat, attorney, arms control negotiator who served as head of the United States delegation of the Organization of the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons from 2003 to 2008. He was a longtime partner at Javits & Javits and a State Department consultant, receiving the Superior Honor Award for his diplomatic service. A very bright, articulate man with tremendous vision. Our guest today, Ambassador Eric M. Javits. Let's talk about the Iran war. The Republicans see this as a tremendous success, wiping out 92% of the military capability of Iran, destroying so much of the Iranian Navy, Air Force, ballistic missiles, and hopefully the nukes. So let's get your judgment on the success of the Iran war, Ambassador Eric Javits.
The outcome is yet to be determined. The delegation is on its way to Islamabad in Pakistan to continue discussing with an Iranian delegation whether or not we're actually going to be able to end hostilities. My opinion is that we do not adequately educate the American public in either the history, the problem we face, and it's almost intractable and intransigent. This problem will not be solved if we don't understand Iran. I dealt with them for 8 years in Europe on arms negotiations. They do nothing but dissimulate and lie, because in their and the Shia religion is to dissimulate, to lie, to pretend, to really not be negotiating partners that agree and intend to fulfill an agreement. It's a tactic, and the strategy is to ultimately prevail. Ultimately. If you look at the Iranian constitution, it provides basically for world dominance. It points specifically at the Western countries and the democratic countries as countries that are their targets that they have to overcome. I don't think they will attain this, but we've been at war with them since the Barbary Pirates, the beginning of the United States.
Right.
And we've been in this particular war with this administration in Iran for 47 years. They have killed thousands of Americans. They have attacked our embassies. They've bombed us. They've assassinated us. They've done everything they can to hurt America. And they will continue to do that regardless of what happens, unless that regime not only is changed, but that constitution of Iran changed. We had a World War II in which Britain was led by Winston Churchill. He understood Hitler. He had read Mein Kampf, but he said that the Quran is a more dangerous document than Mein Kampf. We have to understand what the Quran presents if it's being followed by the militant and radical wing of the Muslim religion. It is a declaration of war to destroy us. They can kill a Christian or a non-believer, and it's their entry to heaven. It's their passport to heaven if they do that. I mean, this is insane. Unless you can put this in the hands of sober, realistic, honorable Iranian citizens. Hopefully that is the majority of them, because it was a wonderful regime under the Shah's regime, except for the fact that he was very cruel to the the imams. But he knew what he was dealing with, and that's why he had to be cruel. And unfortunately, that's why we had to go to war now, again, to try to preserve freedom for the world. Otherwise, we'll never have it. So I think a truce is going to work. I don't think a peace agreement is going to work. Nothing's going to work but overthrowing that regime and replacing it with a peaceful, civil combination of the people in Iran. And frankly, it's mostly women that'll help, because the men are split. If you looked at the protests that were going on now and in the last week or so that our media carried, you didn't see a woman. It's all men. It's all radical Muslim men. Basically, the IRGC was ordered to turn out along with all of their military, and that's who were rallying in civilian clothes. It was a propaganda move. But the women of Iran enjoyed freedom under the Shah. The women of Iran have the real stake in the future of the countries if it can be liberated. So I'm hopeful that eventually we will not only wipe out the opposition to a civil combination, a consortium of democratic forces in that country. I don't think we should go in with troops. I don't think we should occupy. I think perhaps we can cordon off a part of the country that's remote and defend that perimeter so that the people who want to organize a civilian government can go there, say, keep themselves safe while they're discussing and having congresses and organizing for a popular government and an uprising. To that extent, we might be able to do it, because we did it when our two pilots or three pilots fell. There was a cordon sanitaire, like a roped-off area where we warned the Iranians, you stay out of this area. We're looking for our people. And we did keep them out of there. Good. We can do that again in another area that's safe for the people in Iran to amass who would like to have a civil protest without getting slaughtered. So we need to do more in Iran. It's going to take time. America should understand that if we don't stop it now, we are going to have it forever. So this is our one chance. He's the only president that has had the guts to really, you know, step up and try to wipe it out. But we must not lose heart. We must not lose patience. And we, at least I think most Americans love America and are patriots. We must understand the need to support Trump, like him or not, but basically to support the fact we need to defend the country, because they were hell-bent to get a nuclear weapon, and they had the missiles now that go like 24,000 miles or 2,400 miles and hit American cities. So we can't allow them either to have long-term missiles or many short-term missiles. And as far as the Gulf of transporting the oil, I think that that is a temporary situation, that Turkey, for instance, has an enormous stake in this war. It's not just the Middle East neighbors like United Arab Emirates or Bahrain or the Saudis that know the enemy, because they're afraid. They're scared to death of the Iranians because they know the Iranians want to take over the whole area and control oil and choke it off from the world to get what they want, which is world domination. And they know that's the way to do it. And of course, the Gulf is the way to the choke point that they can control, which takes them a long way to their goal. However, Turkey is a country that has an enormous mileage of good superhighways. It has pipelines running from the Middle East to Europe. It is the gateway for oil to transport through Turkey safely. And you could see a lineup of oil trucks end to end for hundreds of miles going through Turkey in case we can't liberate that Gulf. But I think we will be able to. I hope we don't have to put troops on the ground. I think we're going to have to probably take Karg Island out. And that is going to hurt the oil supply, but it's going to benefit Turkey enormously. And Turkey will immediately step up to try to be the transport route instead of the Gulf. So there's alternatives, but America really needs to have a much deeper education. I'm sorry that Donald Trump, our president, isn't as good a teacher as he is a politician. But we need to have this explained to the American people,
right,
so that we truly understand our security and world security depends upon solving the Iranian problem for good.
Very good. So well said, so eloquent, a man of vision and intelligence, Ambassador Eric M. Javits, backed by popular demand on the Rusk Report. We were happy about 15 years ago to have Ambassador Javits up to do some speeches in Buffalo, and Ambassador Tony Gioia was so happy to see him in Buffalo, who was the U.S. Ambassador to Malta. If you're listening in Cheektowaga, New York, Montreal, Washington, D.C., drop us a note. Please write to Brian Rusk, The Rusk Report, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. I'd like to thank those who've called regarding our recent guest, author Peter Antonucci, who wrote many bestsellers, including the current one, Palm Beach Affair, Gene Shafiroff, philanthropist, and Ambassador Ronald Gidwitz, who was U.S. Ambassador to the European Union and Belgium. A little plug now, subscribe now and get all the Ampol Eagle newspaper features, recipes, photos, and more. Polonia's weekly newspaper will bring Polish-American news to your email inbox each week for just $19. Get your one-year digital subscription with weekly columns, news from Polonia and Poland, historical and cultural features, and more at theampollegal.com. Just click subscribe at the top of the home page. Some more information about Ambassador Eric Javits. His diplomatic career, nominated as U.S. Ambassador to Venezuela in 1989. He later led the U.S. delegation to the OPCW from 2003 to 2008. Legal background. Columbia Law School graduate and admitted to the New York Bar in 1955. He practiced at his family's firm, Javits & Javits, from 1964 to 1989. A great diplomat and statesman, Eric M. Javits, former ambassador on the Rusk Report. Let's switch to domestic policy now. You mentioned before the taping of the cost of living is of great concern. I know people are concerned about affordability. Trump was reducing inflation down to about 2%, but now it's up with the increase in gas and oil prices. How are we doing on the cost of living, Ambassador Eric Javits?
Well, we're certainly doing better than we did under the Biden and Democratic administrations, but we're not doing well enough at all. And this is something that is being focused upon by the Trump administration. It's not easy to try to pull back after we've had so much spending, which was needless, in my opinion. I mean, there was an enormous amount of appropriated waste. And then when they got the money, there's so much fraud that has been permitted basically by the laxity of the Democratic administrations, the way they dispensed money. They dispensed it and didn't monitor the proper exchange of it. So, of course, when money's around and nobody's looking, everybody just takes it and uses it for political purposes as a giveaway. And that's probably not just running into the billions, but unfortunately into the trillions, if you aggregate the number of years that have been between the Obama and Biden administrations, what has been wasted, and then what we haven't been able to catch since the Trump administration started. It's turning up all over the place. In Minnesota, it turns up. In different states, it turns up. It doesn't turn up in the Republican states of Florida and Texas, but it turns up in all the Democratic areas that are tightly controlled and do not have a two-party system. The two-party system is a wonderful thing if both parties have honor and integrity and a code of ethics. But unfortunately, with the emergence of the media as such a powerful tool of politics, the media is not just there to give the news and entertainment. Unfortunately, it's there as a manipulative device, and it's being misused enormously. I'm terribly sorry that the authorities that license these stations and so forth don't regulate them more carefully about fairness and full disclosure and objectivity, but that's the way it is. So I suppose freedom of speech does give a lot of license, but the editorial content really should stay on the editorial page, not on the front page.
Very good. Let's talk about the tariffs. Trump looks at the tariffs as a great point of leverage, and he wants to have more manufacturing done in the United States. It seems that there are a lot of plants coming in from overseas to do the manufacturing here to avoid the tariffs. Is that a good economic route with the tariffs and bringing in hundreds of billions of dollars with tariffs to the U.S.? How do you see that, Ambassador Eric Javits?
Well, I actually favor the idea of bringing manufacturing back to the United States, not just for the economic reasons, but for national security, because we are going to be helpless if we really get into a world war. And a world war is possible, because we're in a very unstable situation right now with long-term, long-range weapons that are supersonic, very fast, and almost no warning time. And the technology is getting better and better in terms of creating these super weapons. So I'm very concerned. I think that bringing manufacturing back is one of the benefits from the tariffs, not just the financial edge it gives America to overcome the imbalance in favor of the foreign countries that the foreign countries enjoyed for, you know, probably at least eight decades that I can think of, the last 80 years before this happened. When you look at the difference, the trade imbalances and the difference in what a car, if you bought an American car in Europe, you're paying two or three times what you would pay in America. But if you bought a European car in America, you got it nice and cheap. So they had the chance to sell into America, but we didn't have the chance to sell into Europe. And then when you looked at the total trade imbalances between the U.S. and the rest of the world, it was enormous. So putting tariffs back in line to try to get some kind of equality, I think, was the right thing to do in America's interest and in the interest of Americans as a populace. I don't think it should go on forever. I think the readjustment is something that can be tapered off. And once we educate ourselves and our trading partners to a better equal situation, we can then tamper that whole thing down.
We're learning a great deal from former Ambassador Eric M. Javits on the Rusk Report. If you're listening in Buffalo, Toronto, or Northern Florida, drop us a note. Listening to our 50,000 watts of clear channel power with the Bet AM 1520. We appreciate cards and letters, as we have received letters as far away as Scandinavia and New Zealand. Please send them to Brian Rusk, Bet AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. We always greet cards and letters from our Canadian and European listeners. About awards and recognition, Ambassador Eric Javits was twice awarded the Order of Isabella the Catholic by King Juan Carlos of Spain for promoting Spanish culture. He graduated from Choate and Columbia College. He served as president and chairman of the Queen Sophia Spanish Institute. Our guest today on the Rusk Report, former United States Ambassador Eric M. Javits. How is our energy policy? I believe we are an exporter of energy. Years ago, we were an importer. So it seems that Trump has been successful. Gas prices went down about 30% before the war. How do you see U.S. energy policy today, Ambassador Eric M. Javits?
I think we're on the right track as far as energy. When Trump said, drill, baby, drill, that was the answer. We really are so rich in petroleum, in oil reserves, in natural resources, and we have so much unexplored territory. And the Democratic administrations in the past decided to try to shut down so much of it that we were forced to have to import oil, which cost American public a lot of money that was unnecessary. Now we're in a position where we are not only energy independent, but we could supply allies that need it. And this is a temporary thing, because oil and coal are not going to be the energy sources of the future. The energy sources of the future are going to be very different. And we're going to be basically creating electricity using very new technologies. The nuclear is a wonderful thing, because they've now been able to miniaturize it and increase its safety enormously. And therefore, you can have these micro generators with nuclear that are hardly bigger than three or four oil burners, and are safe and can be dispersed and used in areas where they don't present any problem, and particularly in reducing the risk of a failure of our grid. So we have that. We have other sources that will be coming on. And I think our energy situation in the U.S. is very favorable. We have more oil production than any other country, and more resources than any other country. But the world requires an enormous amount for at least many decades ahead. And we will not transition quickly to a new energy age. But I predict that if you looked ahead 50 years, oil will be, and coal will be, much less significant than they are now, far less. So much so that it will not be a problem if the Gulf is clogged or if a pipeline doesn't work.
Let's get back, Ambassador Eric M. Javits, American diplomat, attorney, and arms control negotiator. Let's talk a little bit more about this Iranian constitution. Is it very, very important to change the Middle East, to change this Iranian constitution? Let's talk more about the constitution.
We can talk about it, but the people who know the Iranians best are their neighbors, the countries around the Iranians. The Saudis hate the Iranians. They know them. They know them. They know what they intend to do. And they know that they are hegemonistic, ambition-ridden terrorists. Mm-hmm. So do the UAE, United Arab Emirates, and so does Bahrain. So do all the countries that fear Iran, because they know what Iran's plans and aspirations are, which is to take them all over and control the world's energy supply, and to be able to dictate their will upon the entire world. So I think that if you don't change a constitution, then a new regime is living under a constitution with the same ambition. It doesn't make any sense. Either you get a new regime or a new group that comes to take power that realizes that is not a proper ambition for their country as a goal, to be in charge of the world. And if they refuse to change that, that's not a regime we want to deal with, because we'll have the same problem. So that's a much deeper thing than just winning a war or neutralizing Karg Island or getting a new administration. It's a very serious threat to our lives here and to the world.
We have a minute left on the Rusk Report on the Bet AM 1520. talking about the change of regime, isn't it most important to get rid of the uranium, remove it, get rid of the missiles, the missile launchers, and maybe perhaps even letting them do internally in their country as they please, but get rid of the threat of nukes and missiles?
Yes, because that is putting them into the driver's seat, if they have it. And not just the driver's seat of the Middle East, but it absolutely threatens the liberal Western countries because they have the missiles, they have the technology, and we can get all of it if we solve the problem correctly, which is to take this regime down and make sure we're dealing with people who do not want to have that kind of control or dominion over their neighbors. And the rest of the Middle East will back us with that and help us with that. So we need to stick fast to our goals and understand we can't leave them with anything to threaten their neighbors or the world.
Sorry, we have to bring the Rusk Report to close. Back by popular demand, we are learning again from the wisdom and vision of former United States Ambassador Eric M. Javits. Special thanks to Kevin Carr, Director of Production. And please drop us a note to Brian Rusk, that AM 1520, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Buffalo, New York, 14226. Thanks again for enlightening us so much, Ambassador Eric Javits. Have a great week.
You've been listening to The Rusk Report, a program that takes an inside look at the Western New York community with news, features, and special guests. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Brian Rusk, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.